Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call radio show, and we're glad to have you with us. And I'm Bob Griswold, and I'm going to...
Mary Griswold.
Mary Ann Luray, the filling station in Jones County.
And Jim McConnell, Newbern Fire and Rescue.
Well, now, thank you.
Mary Ann is here because we're going to talk about what happens after a hurricane and some of the resources that are available. And the filling station has gotten involved on the state level. Is that true?
That is correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about that.
Well, we had the opportunity to do that when Hurricane Florence met us at our doors. And we actually opened our organization August of 2017 and building a food pantry, teaching kitchen, and a platform for educating the residents of Jones County. Unbeknownst to us, we'd be called into action.
Days later, yes.
Well, it was actually a year later, September 2018, and so county manager called on us, and then we started having conversations with Craven County because all the flow of the resources coming into Craven County, you all had what you needed, and then you started funneling it out. Worked with Steve Tyson, Sabrina Bingle here in Craven County. But whenever you have an organization that accepts the call of being a disaster relief facility, then that gets the awareness of the state. Since they know, hey, this is a place that's willing to organize and distribute for the residents. So, yes, we house several different organizations. FEMA was there with their bus for about 2 months, SBA, Habitat, Salvation Army, Red Cross, just to name a few. They were there on our campus for about 14 weeks. And so just helping the residents find out what they need and where to start.
Do you remember how many houses they lost over in Jones County?
Yeah, there are about 456.
Mm-hmm. 400 that lost mm-hmm. during that.
And some, we went down about 1,000 in population. We're at about 9,100 now in 457 square miles.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what were some of the services that were offered?
Yeah, well, first thing, we wanted to make sure that everybody had applied for FEMA because that affects resources for everybody. So there were a lot of folks, because of languaging, just did not understand the process. And so we helped them do that, working with SBA as well. Also immediate needs as far as connecting to Samaritan's Purse or the Baptist Men's Mission or any of these organizations that were providing the mucking out, the tearing out. And depending on the level of what they needed, depended on where they were.
Now,
connected.
Exactly what role did FEMA play? Exactly mm-hmm. what does FEMA do? I honestly don't know. I've never been in a hurricane situation serious enough to have to call on FEMA.
Well, anytime that the governor says, hey, we are now a disaster area, then folks are encouraged to go ahead and sign up and apply for FEMA assistance. Even if you haven't yourself been affected, that affects the funding that comes into the county.
So that helps us get attention.
Exactly. From, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that sounds silly because we have to figure out how to do all that paperwork that we don't know how to do.
Well, right. And with language, it is. There are a lot of people that are very nervous, and they're not sure what steps to take. And so just making them feel calm and everything's going to be okay. I know life is crazy. You can't even get in your house. But just helping them to understand that resources are here, people are here to get walk you to that next level.
So essentially mm-hmm. you were acting as a liaison.
Mm-hmm. Very much so for Jones County. Trenton flooded so badly that the Civic Center could not be used. And so they had already directed folks out to the Fayetteville-Sanford area. So they needed a disaster center, so we were called upon, and we had the space in the facility to
And you
do
never
it.
Flooded?
the water came up to about halfway to the door. the house next door flooded, but the owner of this campus, before we took ownership of it, had poured tons of sand in there. So, you know, he was joked years ago, but it was sitting high up on a hill.
Sitting high. The old Jenkins Gas Company.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yep. So that's the reason we're called the filling station. We've gone from filling gas tanks to filling souls and stomachs. So,
and,
yes.
And being a radio amateur, that's also where the
That's where your office is. And we are so grateful to New Bern Amateur Radio Club being our very first partner, using the old radio tower, the 100-foot tower that is on the building that the gas trucks used. So we have a generator and we have that tower. Therefore, that attracts great people like yourself.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Now, what would you say to somebody after a hurricane? What would be their first phone call, their first contact? What would you recommend?
Well, what are your most immediate needs? It's really hard to connect people and resources without knowing what that immediate need is. So at what level are you in need?
Okay, my house is intact. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. My family's okay. My pets are okay. Mm-hmm. But I have no electricity and nothing to eat.
Okay. So, yes. So we'll make sure that either food is delivered or you can come and pick that up. Also, helping to educate them about, you know, who's doing what, whether it's Jones Onslow or Duke Energy, and who's and people also don't understand too that once you have a flood and you lose power, it has to be inspected before you reconnect, just for safety. So people, you know, they couldn't understand why they couldn't be reconnected to get air conditioning and work done, but it has to be inspected, and we just didn't have the manpower to make sure all that was done. So you just have to wait your turn.
Somehow you have to be patient when you don't want to be patient.
That's right.
It's probably the hardest thing to do, because you're hot, you're disturbed, you just lost everything that you have in some aspects, and you want your power back on right away.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yes.
Oh.
Well, when I talk about the filling station as it relates to disaster relief, I would say that when you stay prepared, you don't have to get prepared. And it's a responsibility for every single citizen to be prepared in some way, shape, or form. We don't like the disasters, but invariably, they are going to come. And so I would say that the filling station is a place where we are a connector of people and resources. Most of the time, we are not going to do the thing that needs to be done, but we can connect people with where they need to go. We have a strong, wonderful working relationship with our sheriff department, emergency management area in Jones County. And so we are all working together to strengthen the entire county, and then of course our wonderful surrounding counties. So it's a great partnership and doing that. But we just finished a 2.5-hour training with the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina with five of our staff for disaster preparedness. I do serve on a state commission in working with 20 other folks from the mountains to the coast. So when we do have something like that, then you can know how to flow the resources. And people, you know, the state office needs to know who is willing to play
you know,
the game.
You know, I think one of the things, how many meals are you distributing in a week right now?
We serve about 800 households a month.
800 households
about 200 a week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so in the event of a disaster, it's mm-hmm. not like you're going to have to create something from scratch.
That's right.
You do have to up your effort and double and triple and quadruple your effort, but you have a process down. So
we do have a process, and I will tell you, we built the teaching kitchen. It is just finished with that in mind. So that teaching kitchen has three different stoves. Of course, if we ever have a disaster, then we can go in and cook food there. So we're set up and ready in the event, but it was a marketing campaign that we could have never written a check for. And so we appreciate the opportunity to be a part of Hurricane Florence. We've learned a lot.
You know, then another thing you mentioned earlier about being prepared all the time. And folks, if you come in and you are unprepared, don't blame the people that are prepared for your lack of preparation. It sounds crazy, but yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Any other comments?
Yes, I would encourage you all to visit our website, fillingstation1075.com, for more information, for our story, and for additional resources. That's fillingstation1075.com. We are on social media as well, and we invite anybody to come by and take a tour. Mary Ann Luray, The Filling Station in Pollocksville, North Carolina. Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you, Mary Ann, for being here, and we're going to take a quick break. Thank you.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. Glad you stayed with us, Mary.
We've added to our crew now. Again, I'm Mary Griswold.
I am Chief Patrick Gallagher of the City of New Bern.
I am Stanley Kite, Director of Emergency Services for Craven County.
Craven County Sheriff Chip Hughes.
Damon King, Pastor, New Beginning Celebration.
Jim McConnell, New Bern Fire and Rescue.
Well, again, thank you, everyone. And I'm Bob Griswold. So,
I'm going to start with you. What is the most important thing for people to do after the storm passes and they kind of evaluate where they are? What's the next step?
So if you're a person that stayed, make sure you pull out that resource kit you had. you know, because you're on your own for a little while. Many of the emergency services resources are probably going to be tied up with other needs, but call if you do need us. The other thing is you live in a community. Look out for your neighbors. See what's going on. If you do go outside, be very careful of all the hazards around your house. You could be hanging branches, wires that you don't see, the floodwaters. Everything around you could be very hazardous. The norm is no longer normal. So just be aware of your situational awareness, we call it. So look around before you actually commit to doing something. And because what was normal at the beginning of this storm is probably not as normal as it is right now.
And I think as we had mentioned last week about for anybody that has a generator, make sure you are not backfeeding.
Yeah, just make sure you're not backfeeding those circuits. Hopefully it was professionally installed because that could be hazardous to a lot of other people.
And as was said a little bit earlier, that if you got flooded out, don't expect to turn your electric on right away.
Not right away.
I'm going to ask what may be a really dumb question, but I'm hoping there are people out there that are as uninformed as I am. Does having utilities underground make a difference in a hurricane in terms of whether or not you keep your power or how long your power's out or anything? Does it matter at all?
It matters as far as the damage to the infrastructure, but it doesn't mean you're going to have power. It doesn't mean you're going to have communications equipment because there may be other places or locations that's causing that failure or point of failure. And I'd like to expand that. A lot of times the providers of these services have to shut down certain communities and certain neighborhoods to protect that infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible inconvenience for those people who lose that service. I've had a lot of people complain that, hey, I had service and then all of a sudden it went black. Well, they're trying to protect the infrastructure to get the biggest good for the most people back at one time. But until they go through with their own storm damage assessment teams and figure out what's damaged, and again, they're going to prioritize critical infrastructure.
You know, Stan, I think a couple of years ago, and I can't remember how far back, but we lost two substations of power substations, and so we did have, as you say, we did have that, I'm going to say, rolling blackout or whatever else to make sure that we had enough power, and we didn't cripple what was left.
But again, they're tasked with trying to make sure that those critical primary infrastructures have some redundancy, and they try to get those back online first. And it creates an inconvenience for a lot of people, but it's a necessity in order to, again, sustain life in places where life could be lost without it, especially where special medical equipment and so forth is needed. So we understand that, but that's just one of the inconveniences. That's why we say, if you're going to shelter in place, be prepared for just like if you're camping for a week.
Yep.
Yeah, we you will be inconvenienced. Just accept the fact that you will be inconvenienced, and you may not have the internet immediately, and you may not have all your favorite TV shows or whatever else. You know, we also look at when you're losing power and you have to endure, I'd say endure, the loss of the air conditioning, the climate control or whatever else. And folks, remember to stay safe when you don't have the right climate control. You know, if you stay hydrated, don't get stupid.
There's a lot to be said for filling up the bathtub before the storm and not being afraid to climb in it when the house temperature gets extremely warm. You know, I mean, it does get warm down here, and I know that after Hurricane Katrina, everybody's refrigerator became a science experiment because they were without power for a number of days. And when you went back to New Orleans maybe a month or so later, everybody's refrigerator was out on the curb being collected because there was no way they could be salvaged. It was...
Wow. Mm-hmm. Everything.
But we have a saying in emergency management that it's the second disaster after the primary disaster is the disaster of people taking unnecessary chances with contaminated foods and products that are not safe for them to consume. And that, again, is why it's important for them to listen to local recommendations, follow the recommendations on how to be prepared and how to take care of themselves without getting to that risk, because the health problems can be significant. From contaminated water to contaminated food.
Mm. That was one of the advantages. We had a power outage in New England, and one of the advantages, mixed blessing, of having a power outage of New England in the winter is you could put the food on the back porch and it would stay cold. Mm-hmm. it wasn't an issue.
You may not be able to heat the house, but yeah.
Yeah, but that was done more than once. You go out ahead of time and you buy a couple of bags of ice and you just put it on the back porch because the temperature is not going above 35 degrees.
In the best of conditions, local law enforcement, and I think I can speak for the sheriff, we have an operational plan that's based on what the average calls for service is. And in 99.9% of the time, we can handle those within a reasonable amount of time, depending on whether it's an emergency or non-emergency. As Chief McConnell indicated, normality is not the word of the day. And so the services that local government can provide is strictly limited. And with respect to law enforcement, you have to understand that we are going to prioritize what we're going to respond to and what we can respond to because of our staffing. And so when we receive these phone calls, and for instance, let me give you a couple scenarios, larceny, trespassing, property crimes, misdemeanor type of incidences, they are low. We are going to respond to acts of violence, felonious activities, things that impact not quality of life, but health and safety. And so citizens just have to realize that part of being patient is understanding where our limitations lie.
And again, folks, don't get, I'm going to go back to New England, where they measured certain snowstorms in bottles of wine. Don't get stupid and get all tanked up. Think that you're in charge. You're not. Weather is in charge. We're looking at each other in silence. So go.
So your prioritizing your crimes because you're short-staffed and you may not be as mobile as you normally would be?
That's part of it. But I think the larger part of that is what is driving our mission. So following a storm, we're doing storm assessments. We are trying to create lanes of travel where, because we don't have the ability, it is likely we're not going to have the ability to power major intersections. So we will have staff out there directing traffic. Mm-hmm. And you might ask, some citizen might say, well, what's more important, an officer directing traffic or coming to my home and taking my report? Well, it's a simple answer. The reason we're out at MLK and Glen Burnie is because if we're not out there, fire and rescue, we're going to have to go out there because somebody has plowed into somebody. So
yes.
These are critically important infrastructure tasks that we have. And so the priority, as you're indicating, begins with a hierarchy of need.
Yeah, and it makes, I didn't even think of that, but if you don't have stoplights, not everyone is wonderfully courteous. And it's going to be to your advantage to get people out at intersections.
And you've also sort of mentioned tangentially, again, we've just got to figure out which roads, in fact, are open and which ones are not open. I mean, you can go down a long road and then all of a sudden there's a tree in the middle of the road, or I experienced when I was on the fire department, there's a couple of live lines down there. I can't call, I mean, I can call the electric company to shut that one line down, but you know what? If they're taking care of bigger problems, again, they've got to prioritize what they're doing. If I'm there with a truck, all my job is to stay there and keep people away from that live line.
Right.
And I can get frustrated as all get out because I don't get anybody else coming.
Well, let me say this. I have 30 square miles to deal with. That's not a big area. It's not a small area, but it's not a big area. The sheriff has substantially more than that. And you want to talk about challenges. I put my take my hat off to him in an incident like that in terms of trying to manage the square miles he has.
Yeah, it is. It's quite an undertaking. Of course, you know, we have mutual aid agreements with all of our municipalities for the most part that help out, help us cover the areas. But, you know, it's the chief hit it right on the head. Our operational plans mirror what he was just talking about. You know, we have to prioritize, and that's where Stanley's crew help us with that. You know, is it an actual 911 emergency as opposed to an inconvenience? You know, everybody's going to be inconvenienced. What we don't need is, you know, as soon as the storm passes, that's not time to get out and just ride around and sightsee. To see the misfortune of others, because once again, you know, I keep going to power lines that could be down. You know, we had one just yesterday when the storm came through on Broad Creek Road. We had a tree down, and as many pine trees as we have in this area, there's going to be lines that get hit with trees and they go down. Well, part of the road was blocked and part of the road had lines on it, but you could not see them.
Ooh.
Because they were tangled up in trees. So that's just right after the storm. That is not the time to be going sightseeing. You know, stay put. And if it's a true emergency, we'll get to you as soon as quick. But patience is going to be key. When they call Stanley's people and go, hey, we've got, it's not going to go away. It is put in a computer aided dispatch system. It's not forgotten about, but they prioritize and dispatch us.
Again, triage takes over.
Exactly.
Triage takes over. And you've got to figure out what's the highest of the priorities.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned that was yesterday, folks. That was, and again, we're recording on Thursday. And so we're not waiting for the hurricane to respond to incidents like that. We need to be ready at all times. Folks, we're going to take another quick time, a break, to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And we'll be right back.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back, folks, and thank you for staying with us through the supporters and our sponsors. Stanley, you wanted to...
Yeah, I think we are especially privileged that we have a unique situation, whereas here the emergency responders oftentimes team up. For example, we may have a high-rise vehicle mission going into a neighborhood to where that vehicle is occupied by law enforcement, whether it be sheriff deputies or police, as well as firefighters or medic or whatever the team takes for the mission. It could be a combination of, and they all work real close together. And how that works a lot of times through both municipal and county emergency operations centers, we identify the mission, we assign the mission, and then the ops chief decides what's needed to take care of that mission. And as McConnell can tell you, they go from there, and they play the playbook based on the identified need for the mission. And we just have a great working relationship. I can know of several calls during several flood events where sheriff deputies and firemen and all in the same vehicle, but they got the job done. And that made his staff go from 1 to 5 and vice versa. It made the security better for the fire and EMS people to feel safer to do their job. But again, it has to be ranked and prioritized as far as whether or not the mission happens. But if the citizens would just help us by partnering with us and staying calm and staying in place and give us a few days, that would make a big difference.
And also, don't try to exceed your capabilities.
Make a big difference if they just give us a few days. Mm.
And we talked a lot about the citizens that stayed. We got to think about the citizens trying to get back here. If they would just listen and communicate with our local people, maybe it's not time to come back. Give us a chance to get up and run it again, because the influx of people coming back is very difficult to handle when our resources are already maxed out. And if they could just give us a little bit of time to get our feet back under us and moving resources, taking care of the priorities that are here right now, if they're away, they're not a problem. But as they try to influx our population again and move back in, it just causes more hampering of resources and danger to them possibly. And as we said, patience is very important during this time.
And also stay aware of where your neighbors are also. If they headed out of town, make sure that you know who's out of town and who decided to stay, or and make sure that when you go out that you let somebody behind know that you're not there. You've moved to higher ground, I'd say.
I made a comment about the officers responding out to certain intersections, and that's very important. But the driving public also needs to understand two points that I think should be echoed and reinforced. One, if a traffic light is out, that's a four-way stop. They do not have the right-of-way. They must stop at a light that is non-functioning. That's critically important. Number two, part of how we stretch our resources is if I can't put a human body at an intersection, we will put signage up. Those signs are placed there by government officials, whether it's Public Works, or it's a deputy, or it's an officer, or it's somebody within the fire service. We're placing them there to keep drivers from going down a particular road or a stop sign or some. Pay attention to those. And just because law enforcement is not there to enforce it, if you opt to ignore that sign, there are consequences if you find yourself in a situation where you're now trapped. And I don't mean in a legal sense, but there are legal consequences. I mean from a personal safety perspective.
You know, I happen to have been up in New York. I worked in New York City and went out to Long Island. This was November of 1965, what was called the Great Blackout of the Northeast. And I had to actually go back into New York City to go and get a number of folks and bring them back out to safety. And unfortunately, they spent the time waiting for me drinking. So,
and none of the traffic. Can you picture New York City without a single traffic light working?
But I would suggest that one incident, again, November 1965, people were as courteous as you could ever imagine, whether it was private citizens out there with a flashlight trying to help at intersections. And again, I'm not going to recommend that as a first response, but people being very courteous, stopping, as you said, stopping four-way, and just recognizing that, you know, that we're in this together and we all have to get people out properly. And it was, there was another blackout that was actually 180 out from that, where people decided they needed to loot and do whatever else. So, but that first one, no, it was a good human response.
In terms of what you were talking about, in terms of people coming back, when people come back too soon and the electricity isn't restored, you have to worry about feeding them and taking care of them in ways that if they would just stay out till the electricity comes back, you wouldn't have to deal with that. So you're draining your resources if people come back too early.
And you're exactly true. It's you are draining our resources, but it's not only electricity, it's the other infrastructures. It could be water, it could be sewage, it could be your roadways being taken away and are just not safe to travel. So there's a lot more than just the utilities. We think about the electricity, having lights and air conditioning, but there's a lot of other safety features that go along with when we talk mm-hmm. about infrastructure. And it's just the regular roadways that we drive up and down. And as the chief said, there's sometimes we put signage out there for a reason. Either there's water passing over it, or the infrastructure, as we've seen around our county, the road's been taken out, but people don't see that. And they want to try to circumvent those situations, and then it becomes a call for service for us because they've done something outside of what they should have listened to.
There's a couple things that citizens can do to help mitigate some of the post problems. I think stormwater and debris removal, if it's safe to do so. Understand that all of that debris that's out in the roadway or in the gutter system is going to find its way into the stormwater, and next thing you know, that's backed up. Don't exasperate it by putting your storm debris in areas that would be sucked up into that infrastructure. Public Works has a heck of a mission after a storm. And one of those is, how are we going to get all of this water that wants to find its way naturally back into the waterway system, but it's only blocked up because the infrastructure's impacted?
Something's in the way, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so whatever we can do to clean up the neighborhood, help neighbors. Find an elderly neighbor that you've got and make sure that they're okay. Make sure that if they decide to stay, and make sure that they're okay. Make sure that they're taken care of. If you do have some kind of support, whether it's a generator or whatever else, you may need to keep your food cold and share food with your neighbor. Don't let them eat that. As you mentioned, don't let them eat the spoiled food.
I saw a genuine idea in one of our communities down off the Blangia Point, in that the neighbors all got together that figured out who was going to lose their food. So what they did, they decided each night, tonight we'd go to Jim's house, we'd cook everything that Jim had. Tomorrow night we'd go to the sheriff's house, we'd cook everything, and have community block parties by feeding.
Disappointed.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I haven't break by
it's
right
a, it's a great out, it's but, a great yeah theory. It sounds
but,
good.
But they did that to save just letting the food.
Yeah, to save it.
Go to loss and tossing it. So they went through the process of coming together as community and working as community. And I thought that was just wonderful that they were doing that. And you know what? It actually relieves a lot of the community stress. Because they started to realize it was going to be days and weeks and months. It wasn't going to be an overnight fix for that community.
Now, as individuals, how can we encourage everybody to pre-plan something like that? I mean, and again, with Marianne was here, you know, you've got to pre-plan the evolution that you're going to go through. How do we encourage that pre-planning? Again, your neighborhood, I'm on a small street with 10 houses or 11 houses. I need to take inventory of those 10 houses or 11 houses, and we need to encourage that through all sections of the county, through all sections of the city.
We asked a lot of times that people work through their HOAs or HMAs and work through the groups that have meetings on a cycle, whether it's, you know, annually or biannually or whatever, and start the process and invite agencies out to speak with them as a group and help them understand that you need to make a plan. Either you're going to shelter in place or your plan is to get out of town before impact. It doesn't hurt my feelings either way, as long as you're prepared. Just be honest with you, but they need to understand that the delusion that they're safe where they're at, it may not be true if they have an improper assessment. That's why I said in the beginning, a good self-assessment has to be made. What is your threat?
Yeah, the chief might have mentioned it last time we were together, you know, about, you know, that kit, having that. And, you know, I think a lot of people forget about their medications. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think he did mention that last time about how, you know, make sure you have ample, you know, and I don't know what, you know, if you have an extra month of medications or whatever, but, you know, when the storm's hitting, that's not the time to go try to slip off to your pharmacist. And have to deal with that. And, you know, another thing I want to talk about is after the storm, you know, some of the things as law enforcement that we're going to be out there looking for. And we're fortunate that we don't have to deal with it as much here in Eastern North Carolina as your urban areas in regards to looting and theft and stuff like that and gouging. But we do have some.
Sheriff, I'm going to take that as a teaser for when we come back from our supporters and sponsors. And folks, we ask you to stay with us.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. E70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Welcome back, folks. Sheriff, I said I was going to use you as a teaser coming back. Okay.
You know, what I was mentioning was, you know, some of the issues or things that we look at after these storms. And one, obviously, is the protection of property. Then that comes into play as we do have folks that come into our area, not as much as some of the urban areas, and will want to price gouge our citizens. Not as much a looting problem here because we got a lot of good people here. And, you know, our downtown New Bern area is, they look out for each other, and they know we're going to be down there protecting their property. I probably got, you know, maybe a handful of texts about, you know, concerned about potential shooting, and we really didn't have any, you know, down there. So, but that was a concern, and I think it's because, one, we do have a presence down there, and folks know that we're not going to tolerate that here in New Bern and in Craven County. But, you know, we do have some folks that will come in from out of state and pose as contractors to clean up yards, to, as Stanley said, sell generators. And that's stuff we want people to be very leery of. You know, if someone's going to come in and, you know, you have one small tree down in their yard, you know, you probably don't need to pay $5,000 up front to get that done.
And they'll be back later to do it.
Right.
To work, yeah.
So, and unfortunately, you know, we did have folks that that would fall to that. You know, that's something, if we're out and about, you know, we don't mind, you know, giving you some guidance on how to deal with these folks. My best is if they come there, get their card. Just say, give me a card, and if I need your services, I will get back with you. So don't fall victim to that, because we did have some folks that fell for that. And
is there a clearinghouse? Is there a place where if somebody comes by and gives you their card that you can check on them?
We don't really. You know, we will get calls about solicitation in certain neighborhoods, in certain municipalities. You know, I know Trent Woods, probably River Bend. I'm not sure about New Bern if they have a no solicitation ordinance. But that would be good to know as well. So the biggest thing is, you know, unless it's a reputable company that, you know, you are familiar with, and I would say stick with our local people, you know, support our local businesses here, where, you know, they've been in business, they're established, they have a good reputation of getting the job done and doing what you pay them to do. Unfortunately, you know, once again, we will have people that come in from out of state that did not get hit by the hurricane, that just look to do work or fraud. So if they do the work, a lot of times they will do a very shabby job and then they're gone, and you have no way of any recourse. And, you know, it's kind of hard for us to track down somebody in Florida that, you know, didn't clean up your yard as they said they would, but they got your $2,000. So we need to be very careful of that as well.
We have a son-in-law who got his emergency management degree, a master's degree. Stanley, I think you know him. But so after Florence, and recently retired from the Marine Corps, and after Florence, he actually was deployed to Georgia to clean up 220 miles of roadway, 110 paved and 110 unpaved roadways. So he was gone for an awful long time for that, and then he came back and he says, you know, emergency management is just like the Marines, because you're deployed and you aren't home.
I can tell you, if our folks, our being the chief and our deputies and police officers, if we see folks riding in neighborhoods where they have damage and, you know, they're possibly from out of state or they look like they're up to no good, they're probably going to get talked to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably going to have to provide documentation of something, what they're doing.
Yeah.
And if they do not belong here, they will be escorted away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something that we are vigilant about. But yeah, that is the aftermath. You know,
and so, again, you've got to be wise and be aware that just, they're coming into,
yeah, many of them, many things,
not all, but many of them are coming into scam.
Yeah.
Well, they target our seniors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
The roofers, the tree removers, and the yard cleanuppers, and they all want money up front. And that should be the first indicator that something's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once they're challenged by local law enforcement, you don't see them anymore. They'll move to another community.
Yeah, and once again, we talked about patience, but if you can hold off for a day or two, there's a lot of resources through the local churches and church groups that want to get out there and help you, and they'll do it for free. And we'll find resources for you for that kind of stuff, but there's a lot of free resources after a natural disaster that we can work with our local communities and pastors and church groups that want to help our people, and for nothing. So once again, if you can wait and be a little bit patient, you probably can get that same thing done fairly free.
Absolutely right. I've got the scars to prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of teams, but again, again, as you said, though, those teams, a lot of them are also supported nationally.
So national teams,
a,
yes.
It takes a little while.
Samaritan's
but
Purse.
Get in and town and get set up and get established. Mm-hmm. Then they have to do case management. And then they have to prioritize which cases they're going to work first. So patience is going to be viable to have, you know, during that type of situation.
The thing, one of the things that impressed me after Hurricane Flo was Samaritan's Purse and Operation Blessing were still there a month later. They were still giving out meals and helping people. They weren't in a hurry to just leave us. They were there to help, and they stayed until, I believe Samaritan's Purse was still there by Mumfest, you know, because I think they had a booth set up at Mumfest. But it was, I mean, it was amazing to see the number of meals that they handed out for people that needed food that didn't have a way to cook it was amazing.
If I'm not mistaken, Samaritan's Purse still had people here 2 or 3 years later, didn't they?
They're still here.
They're still here.
They're still here. Yeah. They're partnering right now along with the Methodist Men, Baptist Men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of groups that are still in town working with the Craven County Disaster Recovery Alliance, which is housed over on Little Cherry Point Road.
Yeah,
they're still working through that agency, doing case management and working with them to try to help rebuild for especially those families that have fallen through the cracks.
Well, that's amazing.
Even the Mennonite. A lot of those major groups are still in play. You just don't see the visibility of the numbers that they first came in with because they've got other disasters to deal with as well.
And the media has left. The media has left. So,
well, it's not the hot topic today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people still suffering out there from that.
Having lived through quite a number of these types of storms, I've found that there are some very benign issues that come up that turn out to be very problematic, and especially relating to pet ownership. And what we end up seeing is we come across so many pets that are displaced. And one, they don't have tags. We have no idea who they belong to. Our animal care facilities become overrun. And I don't want to say out of no fault of the owner, but if the owner only had taken some precautionary measures to ensure that their pets have the proper tags, because here's two things I want to know. One, where am I taking this dog? I would prefer, or cat, I would prefer to take it to an address and, you know, let Fido, you know, I don't want to take him to the animal shelter because it's just, or a phone number. Make sure those two things are on your dog or cat. The other thing I would also suggest, if you're a pet owner, not only do you need food, but your pet needs food as well. And if you're going to evac out of your home and you're going to leave a dog and cat in your home,
oh, no.
That is that's animal cruelty.
It really is.
No, that I think people should microchip their animals because that way you're sure.
And I don't want to minimize that, and I agree wholeheartedly. However, even a microchipped animal, animal control officer likely would have a reader, but the police officer that comes across this animal is not, and that animal is likely closer to where they need to be, and we can deal with that very more quickly if we just have that information.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to add, make sure that your pets are up to snuff on rabies shots also. I mean, as you're coming across with the law enforcement or whatever else, I don't want to endanger somebody unnecessarily with a non-vaccinated animal. And folks, if that's your domestic animal, you take care of it. And again, you make sure that pet can be identified quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Any other, and you know, if you are sending your pet somewhere, and as you said, Chief, send food with the pet.
Right.
There are a lot of places to stay if you evacuate now that will allow pets. There's no reason not to take the animals with you.
And there's usually one shelter in the county that will the county will set up to take pets, and usually it's one of the schools. Mm-hmm. What people need to keep in mind is when they come there, they need to bring their vaccination records because they will not be able to come in with the dog or cat
unless they have the
They have the vaccination records with them. So that's very important, because if they show up without, then that means someone doesn't go in and someone stays mm-hmm. with the animal, or the animal has to go to the shelter.
Ooh.
The shelter can only take so many animals, you know, and I saw that in many cases, folks just showed up with their animals, but they had no documentation whatsoever to prove. And the people at the shelter don't have time to try to call a vet that's probably not going to be open to get mm-hmm. records to allow you to bring your animal in.
So not only do you have to identify yourself, you have to identify your shot records and your animals, too.
Yeah. And there's a lot of times there's not an abundance of food that has been brought there for animals. So you got to bring, you know, like you said, you got to bring your dog's food as well.
They like a certain food.
Well, it's just
and it's a stress.
Yeah, it's just it's a lot to think about. And many people wouldn't be like, OK, if we're taking our pet, yep, we better take our veterinarian records with us to show they have been vaccinated so they can get into the shelter.
You're saying just as a person needs a go kit, that animal needs a go kit.
Well, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's something I would not have thought of. That's a good idea.
I wouldn't have had I not saw it happening. And then you've got people that have to make tough decisions.
Yeah, what do we do now?
What do we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, folks, we're reaching the end of the show. And I again, want to just thank everyone for coming out and participating in the show and some of the war stories after a storm and some of the war stories before a storm and some of the preparation and just that you would understand these are serious events. They're not to be laughed at. You just need to be prepared and watch out for yourself, watch out for your neighbor. And remember that we're in this, if it's a storm, we're in the storm together, and don't let the storm beat you up. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call, and thank you very much for joining us.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.